God is all fun. He's joy, he's happiness, he's bliss. He's not a sad or a serious person sitting up there somewhere watching us and judging us. He's full of joy, he's full of life, he's full of energy, he's full of love. And that is how we need to relate to the Lord. It can be the Father or the Mother, Mother Goddess or the Father Goddess. It can be the infinite Brahman, the total consciousness. But our relationship has to be a relationship of joy, of friendship, of love, and talk to him. Don't be afraid of this entity, because he is our breath, he is our life, and that is the only way to relate to him. Because a lot of religions give us this attitude of fear, that he is somebody to be feared and he's somebody to judge. And they say, well, if a person is not God-fearing, then he won't be honest or he won't be good. And we say, you do not fear God, you fear your own karmas, because ultimately it is that which will decide your future. But if you approach this entity as a father in heaven, or as a mother, or as a beloved, or as a friend, or as a child, then that relationship will carry you throughout. And that's why God's nature is described as Sat, Chit, and Anand. Sat means existence, ever there. He was there, he is there, and he will be there even when this world ends. And Chit, Chit being all-knowing. Every thought of mine, every activity of mine is known to that Lord within. Not only mine, but all beings. Everything that is happening throughout the universe, consciousness, is the knower. And then the third is Anand, Sat, Chit, and Anand. So he is all bliss. And the one who goes on this path experiences that bliss. See, like, say if I am going to become a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or a dentist, I work hard for many years, 20, 25 years, and finally after I graduate and I start working, I get a job or my practice, then I enjoy the fruit. So I've gone through a difficult time for many years, and then finally I get the fruit of my labors. And then I can say, okay, I'm enjoying the results. Or if I am building a factory, and I have to go through years of hard work, get the financing and hire the employees and get all the approvals, and finally when it is built, and then also it takes a while for the factory to start producing and pick up, then I can say I'm enjoying the fruits. But the benefit of the path of spirituality is that you enjoy as you go along. You don't have to wait for the final day of realization. Oh, then only I will enjoy God. It's like mountain climbing. I equate it to mountain climbing. The thrill of mountain climbing is as you go up. It's not that only after I reach the peak I will enjoy that. As you are climbing, you can see the beautiful valleys, you can smell the fresh air, you can see the flowers, you can see the birds and all the plants. And then as you go up and up, you experience more and more joy, because you are getting closer and closer to the peak. So similarly, this search of God is like mountain climbing. As you go on the spiritual path, as you progress, your inner joy increases, your desire to know him increases, your closeness to him increases. So that's why they say God is all joy, all bliss. And the closer you get, the more you enjoy his. And that is the glory of this Bhagavad Gita, that it tells us the path how we can get to know this entity called God, or Brahman, or Father in heaven, or Krishna, or Shiva, or Saraswati, or Durga, or Lakshmi. So through study of the Bhagavad Gita, and this Bhagavad Gita, the beauty is that it's in the Lord's words himself. The Lord himself has come down as Krishna, and he's teaching this message to us. So this Bhagavad Gita is something that is being taught to us. It's not being taught to Arjun. It's not being taught to the Pandavas, it's being taught to me. And that is how, when you approach it, then you will realize that it's a very, very practical textbook, not only of how to reach God, but how to live my life. Because they say that in life, you need an instruction in anything. Suppose I buy a new VCR, or nowadays, of course, they don't have VCRs. A DVD player. I'm talking about the old generation. These guys, she's like, what is a VCR? But anyway, or if you buy a new car, you know, the cars are so complicated. Unless you read the instructions, even a cell phone, unless you read all the instructions, you can't enjoy the features. So the Bhagavad Gita is a textbook of life. It's an instruction manual that when you read this, then you can enjoy life better. Just as if you have these new cell phones, the i4 and 5 and all that, you can't enjoy them unless you know all the features. So similarly, to enjoy life, to live life very well, one has to study the Bhagavad Gita, because this takes us directly to the highest. And so today we'll do the two verses, as I had mentioned, the verse number 54 and 55, which take us directly to who God is or what He is. Because last week in the verse number 53, He says, you cannot know me through na vedair na tapasa na dane na na chejaya shakya evam vidho drashtum drashtavanasi mam yatha. He says, you cannot know me through the study of the scriptures. You cannot know me through prayers and rituals. You cannot know me even through charity. So we said, should we not do them? Yes, you do charity, you do prayers, you read the scriptures, you do the rituals and offer the sacrifices, because they help to purify the mind. They help to reduce my vasanas, my selfish tendencies. And then as you do that, then you develop more love for God. And today we will study the verse devoted to love. That is devotion, which is the single-pointed one, which is on top. So we'll talk about that in verse number 54, chapter 11. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakyaha ahamevam vidhorjuna jnatrum drashtum chatatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. So then Arjuna says, if I cannot reach you through rituals, if I cannot reach you through prayers, if I cannot reach you through charity, I cannot reach you through study, then how can I reach you? So he says, by single-pointed devotion. Bhaktya tu anyaya. Bhaktya is the third case, that means instrumental case. So anyaya, single-pointed devotion, shakya, it is possible. Aham evam vidh Arjuna. In this way, evam vidha Arjuna, aham, you want to reach me. How do you reach me? Through single-pointed devotion. It's a continuation of the previous verse where he says, you cannot reach me through this, this and this, but you can reach me through this. And then what does he mean by reaching God? Or what does he mean by knowing God? So he himself explains. He says, jnatum, you can know me. Drashtum, you can see me. Cha tatvena. Tatvena means in essence. What is my essential nature? And then the last he says, praveshtum. So you will know me, then you will see me, and then you will enter into me. O Parantapa, O Arjuna, O brave warrior, if you want to know me, you have to know me through single-pointed devotion. And then after knowing, you will see me, and then you will enter into me. So let us understand a little bit about what is meant by single-pointed devotion or bhakti. Because when we think of bhakti, most Indians will think of, okay, you know, sitting in and singing bhajans and, you know, offering flowers and then crying for the Lord, oh Lord, why don't you come? And then going to the temple, you know, once or twice a week. So that is our extent of bhakti. You know, that is what we think of bhakti. But Gurudev, wherever he talks about bhakti, or when you read Shankaracharya ji's description of bhakti, they say bhakti is the supreme path to reach the Lord. All the other avenues lead towards bhakti, knowledge. Well, some places they say knowledge is the best, but I think they are, in my mind, they are both together. The knowledge and the love are two wings, just as a bird that needs to fly needs two wings, cannot fly by itself. So knowledge is one wing and the devotion or love for the Lord is the other wing. And when you have two wings, then only you can fly up in the sky. So devotion is not only throwing flowers or singing His glories. That is wonderful. We are not putting that down. Of course, that is how it starts. You go to the temple, then you see His beautiful form, or you go to the church and see the beautiful form of Jesus, and then you develop love and you light a candle or you offer flowers and you bow down or you kneel. So all those things are the beginning of devotion. But Swami Chinmayananda says bhakti can only become complete when it is love along with identification, where there is only oneness. And what is the extent of identification? How do you know that I am identifying with a person or a particular, like a child? Now the mother, wherever she may be, say even if she is in a party, and the little child is running around and playing, even though she's talking to her friends, but part of her attention is constantly there. Is the child okay? Is he getting hurt? Is he crying? Is he getting into things he shouldn't? And even afterwards, when the child goes to college and all, her mind is always there. I hope he's doing okay. I hope he's, eating his food on time. I hope he is sleeping. Kid is, of course, up till 3 o'clock in the morning. And then doesn't wake up till 12, but the mother is, all the time worried. So that is called identity. Or when a beloved, when they meet and they first fall in love, not after a few years of marriage, I'm not talking about that. That's a different story. But when they first meet, how close they feel, they constantly want to be with that person. Even if they are not, they are texting each other or they are emailing or they are calling or sending messages. And constantly, they are, and all the time they want to spend every weekends and in the evenings. So why? Because that identification is there, that he and I are one, she and I are one. Or for the child and the mother, because she sees herself in that. So the extent to which you identify with the person, that is how much you love that person. Love is not based on whether he gave me a gift or not, or whether he bought me something or not, or what did he do for me and what did I. It's not a business. Love is measured by the degree of identification, how much you are one with that object of your love. So similarly, how do you identify with the Lord? How do you become one with the Lord? So they say that through constant devotion, through love. The best example I was reading is that it's like a river, like say the Sacramento River, as it comes down from the mountains. In the past, it used to all go into the Pacific Ocean, split into multiple tributaries, multiple branches, and then merges into the Pacific Ocean. So the water was wasted. So I think it was Governor Brown's father in the 1930s, he decided that, this waste of water is not good. We need to send it to the valley. So what did he do? He put dams there, multiple dams, blocked that river. But if he had only put dams and not done anything, say, oh, we're not going to waste the water would accumulate and ultimately flood and destroy the whole of the Bay Area. So what did he do? Of course, he with all the engineers and all the people, they then made a canal. And the canal comes down all the way to the valley and made the valley, the San Joaquin Valley, the most fertile land practically in the world. The amount of fruits and nuts and everything that are grown here. Cotton, very few places in the world are so fertile. So similarly, our attention or our love of our mind at this moment is running out into the world of objects, emotions and thoughts. I want this, I want that, a new car, my money, my profit, my business, my family, my house, my all these, I want this and that and want. And so that love is being wasted. Of course, I mean, one should love one's family. I don't mean that. But constant just dwelling upon an attachment and just only thinking about that. And a lot of times we are only thinking about our possessions or our object or how I can get this or how I can get that, how I can get a new piece of jewelry. So they say that the mind that is running out into the world of objects has to be damned. It has to be stopped. The flow of our thoughts have to be reduced. Because soon as I wake up, immediately my first thought is, okay, you know, it's Monday morning, so I have to go to work. So what am I going to wear? What am I going to eat for breakfast? Whom am I going to meet? Whom am I going to meet? Or whatever I'm going to do. So they say first thought should be just chant the name of the Lord. Get up with Om Namah Shivaya, Shri Krishna Sharanam Mama. The name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, that should be the first thought that comes in your mind. As soon as you wake up chanting the name of the Lord. Whatever mantra you have, it doesn't matter which God, it doesn't matter which form, it doesn't matter which book. But remember the Lord when you go to bed also. And also same thing, when you go to bed, lie down and just relax your body, watch your breath. And then go to bed chanting the Lord's name. So the last thought should be the Lord's name and the first thought. And with practice, it can happen. As soon as you wake up, it happens. After a while, if you do it on a regular basis, that will be the first thought. It will come. It instantly, your mind will say, oh, you know. So with practice, it happens. That's why he says, even in another place, he says that with practice, with detachment and with practice, as you detach from the worldly things and as you attach to him and through practice, abhyase na tu kaunteya vairage na cha grihyate. In the sixth chapter he says, through practice and through detachment you can remember me and reach me. So but for that one has to have the right knowledge. Who is God? What are his qualities? What is the Lord's nature? And unless you have the right knowledge, it becomes very difficult to get attached. And then they say, well, does God have form or is he formless? Should I worship Krishna or Shiva or Jesus? Or should I worship that all-pervading Brahman? Or should I worship him as some powerful force? So through right knowledge, through study of the scriptures, and especially the next chapter that we'll be doing, the 12th chapter, talks very clearly about that. Is God form, with form or formless? How can I know him? What are the qualities? Because here also he says, bhaktya tu anyanya. So the whole 12th chapter is devoted to bhakti. Is the chapter devoted to devotion. So through right knowledge, you understand who this God is, and then only you can love. Because if I say love some, you know, ABCD, you have never seen that person, you never heard, you cannot. But once you say, okay, this person is like that and these are his qualities, then you can. Or when you meet somebody for the first time, you won't, but as you get to know that person, you develop love. So that is what they say, through right knowledge you can develop love. Talking about knowledge, this girl tells her friend, this lady tells her friend, my husband taught me religion. So he said, yeah, he did. How did your husband teach you religion? So she says, I never used to believe in hell, but after marrying him, now I do. Most of the women are saying, yeah, that's true. Attention has to shift. It is nothing but just a shift of direction. Spirituality is nothing. Gurudev says spirituality can be described in two words, detach and attach. So detach from the world of objects and attach to the higher. What is this detachment? We'll talk about next verse, because the moment you say detach, people get afraid. You mean, do I have to give up my house and my money and my kids and I have to put on orange clothes and go to the forest? No, that's not what the Gita preaches. As I said, Gita is a manual of living. It teaches us how to live life. The second line of this beautiful verse is Jnatum, Drashtum and Praveshtum. So you know me, You can see me and you can enter into me. So, you know, it's confusing. How am I going to know God, and then how am I going to see him, and then how am I going to enter? It's very, very confusing. So they say that it's a stepwise. First step is to know. As I said, you study the scriptures or you go to a teacher, somebody like Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda or Swami Ishwarananda, who is coming next week, or some these acharyas. So you go and sit in front of these acharyas and learn from them, or read the books, and if you have any questions, ask. At least that's how I, whatever little I know, is by listening to Swami Chinmayananda's tapes and by meeting all these different Swamijis who come. So the first step is to have the right knowledge. Through studying the scriptures, you develop the right knowledge. Then how do you see? See means you don't see God as standing in front of you. In our Puranas, they say, oh, he meditated for years and then God appeared before him. If he does, that's very good. But most of the acharyas say you don't really need to see him in front of you. When they say seeing, what they mean is that by constantly thinking about those ideas that you have acquired from the teacher, the knowledge that you have received, by constantly repeating it in your mind and understanding it, it becomes your knowledge. And then you say, oh, I see. Like somebody is trying to explain to you a difficult formula of, you know, physics or math, and you say, I don't understand. And then the person explains, you say, oh, I see, now I understand. So seeing does not mean that you see the formula or you see that solution to that math problem. I have understood. So first is to listen to the teacher, and then when that knowledge, which is the teacher's knowledge, becomes my knowledge, I, you know, have understood. So that is called seeing. So that knowledge which was the teacher's knowledge, which was in the book, the knowledge in the book or the knowledge from the teacher, when I understand that and I apply that in my life and I think about it and I understand it, and then it becomes my knowledge, that is called seeing. So one is listening, one is getting the knowledge, and the second is to see. And then he says, tatvena, know me in my true nature. One is, to, as we said, to see God as in the form, and that is good. You can love him as Krishna or Shiva or Mother Goddess or Jesus or whatever. But then don't limit yourself to that, that this alone is God, and this God alone is real, and all other gods are to be, you know, rejected, or they are all second class, only my... Yeah, you can love a particular form of God, and that is wonderful. You know, if you have this love for God where you can close your eyes and you can visualize the form clearly, that is wonderful. In fact, Gurudev says that is, Swami Chinmayananda, that is one of the best ways to develop love, is just visualize the form of the Lord. Say you have it in your temple or in your prayer room. And then if you can close your eyes and exactly visualize that, that is very good. But then they say that you have to then extend that to all forms of God. They are all equally good, whether you call him Jesus or Allah or Father in Heaven or Buddha or Krishna or Shiva or Vishnu or Ganpati. They are all manifestations of that one reality. And then from that, you transfer it to the substratum of the whole universe called Brahman, that it is that one consciousness that has appeared in all these forms of God, has appeared as Ganpati, has appeared as Krishna, has appeared as Buddha and Jesus. And then don't only limit it to that. Extend that to all beings. Because us, all of us, our essential nature is that Brahman, that consciousness. So I am a manifestation of my essential nature is Brahman, consciousness, and so is of everybody else. You know, a lot of these problems occur when some of these teachers go and say, I am God, but you are all my followers. And that's when all this fanaticism comes, you know, when like this Koresh and Jay Jones and some of these cults, when they start, because this one individual considers himself or herself as God and all of the others are supposed to follow. But Vedanta teaches us that you all are divine. You all are a manifestation of that divinity. Tattvamasi, the teacher says. In the Chandogya Upanishad, he tells the student, you are that. Student, you are not Shvetaketu, that you are not anybody away from that. You are that one consciousness. So that is the essence of. So then such an individual develops universal love for all. First of all, he loves himself. He or she loves, because a lot of times our problem comes because we don't love ourselves. Love does not mean in a selfish way, but accepting what we are and loving ourselves as a creation of the Lord, not as a loving as a self in, you know, just spending time in beautifying the body, but knowing that I am the divine manifestation of the Lord. Then what that does is automatically changes your behavior. Once you understand I am that divinity, then you cannot do things that are against that nature. In fact, when Swamiji comes next week, Swami Ishwaranandaji, he'll be here Monday to Friday. He is going to, the talk is on the 16th chapter about people who are divine and then people who are not divine, and how people who are not divine, what are their characteristics. So this kind of teaches me that what is the nature of divinity and how I should live. And so not only that person knows I am divine, but then there is spontaneous love for all animals, all birds, all plants, all fish, all humans. And then such a person does not destroy anybody or does not hurt anybody. So that is called knowing me in my essential nature. When Krishna says, know me as the substratum of all, as substratum of you and the substratum of all, the essential nature. It's a very, very beautiful verse. If you only understand this one verse, there is nothing more to be done. Literally, there is nothing. I mean, this one verse, if you understand, you have reached. So that is, if there's any comments. Any? True. Yeah, Krishna repeats that in many places. Even in the 12th chapter, he says that, because what happens is that in life, we have these joys and sorrows, pleasure and pain, success and failure, heat and cold. And we are all the time running from one to the other, you know. Oh, it's too hot, so I want cold. And then it's too cold, I want hot. And then this gives me joy, so I run towards it. This gives me sorrow, I run away from it. This person I love and this person I dislike and this person I hate. And so in life, we are all the time in this likes and dislikes, you know, joys and sorrows, hatred and love and all that. In the middle of all this, we are caught. But once you identify with that true self, that I am that consciousness, then the problems of the body have less effect on me. Yes, the body will one day be pain, one day be healthy. My mind one day will be happy, one day will be unhappy. Intellectually, one day I'll have success, one day I'll have failure. Somebody will praise me, somebody will criticize me. And that is the nature of it. You cannot always be permanently healthy. You cannot always be permanently happy. You cannot always be permanently successful. In life there are. But the once you identify, that's what I said, you identify with that Lord of love, then you are fine in all situations. Then you see, actually, I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about Krishna's life. Gurudev one place has mentioned his life, and it is a, of course, you'll say he's God and all that, but how he lived his life is so beautiful. You see, Krishna, throughout his, if you read his life, he's always happy. You never see him sad. You never see him serious. He's full of life. He's having fun, and he's spreading joy to everybody. Every incident, anytime you see the Krishna's life, there is, it's never described that he was sitting in one side crying or he was sad. But if you look at Krishna's life, no human being has ever gone through that much sorrow. If you think about Krishna's life, before his birth, he was responsible for the death of 7 of his brothers and sisters. Because, as you know the story, Kansa was the 8th child of Devaki, was supposed to kill Kansa. So Kansa said, I'm going to kill all the children of Devaki. I don't care. The first 7 are not going to kill me. Doesn't matter. Because he was waiting for the 8th child. So the first 7 children of Krishna's mother were killed at birth. Why? Because he was afraid that the eighth one will kill me. So that in a way, Krishna, not directly, but indirectly, he was the cause of, or he lost seven of his brothers and sisters before he was born. Okay, then soon as Krishna gets born, what happens? He has to leave his parents. He has to leave the jail where he was born, and then he gets taken far away to some foster family. Okay, then he begins to love them, and you know, he knows them as his parents. And then he has to face demons, all different demons come, you know, that Putana and Bakasur and all those demons come and try to kill him. They were sent by, you know, by Kansa, and he has to fight them when he's a little baby. And then he grows up, and then he falls in love and starts, you know, enjoying meeting and the gopis, and they all get close to him, and he starts playing the flute, and he becomes the symbol of love for the whole village. You know, Gokul, everybody loves Krishna because he's so playful and he's so fun. And there is nowhere mentioned that he was sorrowful. He used to play his flute, and when he played his flute on the banks of the river, all the gopis would come and they would just gather around him, and they would dance in that beauty of that melodious, you know, message. And then at age 11 years, and when he was 11 years, he has to leave these parents also. Why? Because the evil king Kansa, who was his uncle, was terrorizing, and he had to be killed. And that was the reason Krishna, one of the reasons he took birth. So he has to now leave his parents, the second set of parents. He has to leave all his childhood friends and all the people he loved. And then he has to go off with his brother to some strange land to fight this battle. And there, of course, he defeats the evil king, and then, you know, puts his brother, who was more decent, as the king. And then throughout his life, if you look at it, there was one sorrow after another. He had to see this terrible Kurukshetra war. And he loved the Pandavas, who were the good brothers. And he saw them suffering at the hands of the evil Kauravas. Then he had to witness this terrible war. Then his own family, the Yadavas, the Krishna's Kula, they all died. They fought each other in a civil war. And his entire family was destroyed in a civil war. And his own death was a very violent death. Actually, we went to this yatra with Swamiji, and we saw where Krishna, the spot where he left his body. And they have a very beautiful statue. I still remember that. I have the picture in my, I think, if I don't have it in my phone, I'm not sure. But in that picture, it is shown so beautifully that Krishna is sitting there, and there is a poison arrow in his feet, and the blood is coming out. And Krishna is smiling, and that hunter feels so bad because he thought it was a deer. I guess that was an excuse for Krishna to leave the body. So he made it appear that there was a deer, and that hunter shot the arrow thinking he was shooting a deer. But actually he shoots Krishna in the foot, and then of course Krishna, and then he came and he's bowing down and he's so sorrowful, tears are running down. That, what have I done? I've shot a human being, and Krishna is blessing him and smiling. So the point is that throughout his life, there was one sorrow after another, one tragedy after, but he remained happy. Not only he remained happy, but he helped others. When his friend Arjuna was in sorrow, he preached the message of the Bhagavad Gita, a message of love, of hope. So that is what one has to learn. That's why they say identifying means become like Krishna. Be happy in all circumstances. Learn to laugh, learn to live, learn to joke, and then your life will be perfect. So that is identification of. Any other comments? No, it's a very good point. I think this is excellent, that knowledge is the basis. Without knowledge, you can, like a person wants to become a great basketball player. He has to have the knowledge of what is basketball, and then he has to love the sport. I mean, if his mother is forcibly taking him for, you know, every you know, for the practices, he's not going to love it. You know, like we do, take them forcibly for soccer and for music practice and for dance practice. Unless they love music, unless they love dance, but it has to start with knowing what is music or what is dance or what is sport. So that's, I think that's a good point. Thank you. Knowledge is the basis of developing love, yes. But sometimes you may love a thing, like you say, oh, I, you know, like you've seen a basketball player playing, and you say, I love that sport, I want to play like him. And through that love, then you have a desire to know, okay, now I want to know how to play. So I think they both go simultaneously. I think that's my understanding. But knowledge, of course, is the basis. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
How about the statement that's endemic in our world, ignorance is bliss?
Yeah, I think ignorance is bliss. I think that is depending on a particular situation. Say if something bad is happening somewhere in the world, you know, in the olden days, we never used to know it. If there was some murder in, you know, somewhere, some politician got murdered, maybe a week later or in the, came in the news or, you know, 2-3 days later. And sometimes you never knew it if you didn't. But now instantly by the internet, you know it right away. So in that way, I think ignorance is bliss. If something bad is happening and I don't know it, it's better. Because if I know it, then my mind, like right now, suddenly you hear about this nightclub fire and they got burned to death. In the olden days, you may have heard it or you may not have. It was a big news in the local paper. By the time it got to the Bakersfield, California, it was a small little thing, you know, in one corner. But now with the internet, you know it right away. So that's, I think that's what they mean, that bad things are happening. If you don't know it, it's better. Why do you want to waste your time in learning that? I mean, not that you shouldn't feel bad, but unnecessarily you are then, you know, wasting your emotional energy on a lot of those things. I think that's what they mean. But I don't think in spirituality, ignorance is not bliss, or in any other field in life. Unless you know dentistry, how would you become a good dentist? You know, ignorance cannot be bliss. So. Maybe. So I think knowledge, yes. True, yeah, right. Yeah, that's a good point. I think spending too much time, and a little bit you may want to, you know, look at the headlines or something, but yeah, spending too much, especially watching on TV, because the news, they take you right to that place and they, you know, they, somebody killed, and so they will talk to all the people whom he, you know, his friends and his relatives, and they keep on dwelling upon that and make the news kind of, as you said, go into your consciousness, where then you yourself become as miserable, or you see his mother crying, and I mean, so then it brings you down too. And I think, yeah, because, I mean, you can't do anything to help her, but just by thinking about it, you get more. Yeah, I mean, you can pray and all that, but you're right. I think knowing news is not necessarily good. Yes.
Yeah. But we can never be part of God unless we understood that that we have knowledge of good and evil.
True.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be a human.
Right, but I think, but what her point is that if you have a limited amount of time, see, we have a limited life to live, and out of that, I have 24 hours, and so many hours go in sleep. So many hours go in my daily activity. So I have very limited amount of discretionary time where it is for me. Now, if that much time, if I have an hour every day, should I read, you know, horror movies or horror books, or should I be reading books about God? I mean, you know there is good and bad, but why do you want to just fill your mind with that violence? That's what happens to these kids who shoot and all. Because they're filling their mind with those video games and those violent movies and the TV shows, because that is what sells. You know, violence sells, or sex. Those are the two things that sell movies. So these kids grow up watching that constantly. And that is what, so that's what she's saying, that if you have a discretionary time, try to do more of the spiritual. And you know what is happening. There's nothing wrong in watching the news, but don't get so much involved. But spend as slowly turn the direction of your thoughts. And that can only happen if you fill your mind with positive thoughts. Then only you will become a positive individual. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukh Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Hari Om Shri.